Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it is now or never, and I can't emphasize just how much little time we have left. Anyway, we are going through the content. What I'm trying to wrap up, because what we need to do is we need to get into the ratification debates. And so why is that important? Because there's probably no more important documents. I mean, if you believe that the words of Christ, the words of the prophets are important in understanding the law, because the law being the Ten Commandments and the doctrines that have been professed, then you have to look at the ratification debates in the same light, because this is where the framers clearly delineated what every clause, as much as possible, folks. And there's no doubt in my mind, as I go through this, I believe the Lord made it so that almost every stone was turned. The few things, at least the one thing I know for a fact that needed to be turned, was the issues that arose under the 14th Amendment. So we go through all of this. And so one of the things, as I started going through, because we're really at a point where we're just kind of going through and defining things now for you, so we should kind of book through this relatively quick. However, I've noticed that there are some points and parts that are out of place, such as the oath. We just covered citizenship, and we kind of went through the oath regarding citizenship, and I don't want to necessarily repeat all of that. So what we were doing, and I'll give you a good case in point. I think we underplay the oath, and I think that the oath needs to be far more integral in our everyday lives, and I think we need to really start holding people to these legal commitments, because when you take an oath, you swear on an oath, you are legally bound that you must do those things. If you fail to do those things, and you violated that oath, then the consequences must come with that. Now, one of the things that I'm going to be inserting really quick, and we'll get to it when we get into the oaths. We won't cover that today. We'll probably get that tomorrow, maybe Monday. That being said, one of the petitions, and this is why this is kind of important, but it had nothing to do with apportionment and citizenship and voting, but it does have something to do with voting, because I believe any person that becomes a registered voter as a U.S. citizen and you're registering to vote, you need to take the oath of the citizenship so that you understand that you are legally obligated now, and somebody that is going to be voting in our election system, you must defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. Folks, we're at a point where we actually see on our ballots unconstitutional measures, and people are actually voting for things that are unconstitutional. We've got to stop this. This cannot be acceptable. In a Republican form of government, which is based on the rule of law, and the law dictates that the Constitution must be supported. I don't care if you have an affinity for doing something that would be unconstitutional. If you have that affinity, it doesn't mean you're doing it. It's something that you think we ought to be able to do. Then you need to sell an amendment to the Constitution to allow that, to allow the federal government to do that, whatever those things are. But if you think that by voting for something and undermining and bypassing the actual process in the Constitution, that is unacceptable. And that term, unacceptable, is going to be used quite a bit as we start moving forward, because they really break all of these types of things down. So anyways, you know you are listening to this show that is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And the show that actually gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Now, I've told you, go check out and get your subscription to Wyoming Conservative Chronicle. I'm hoping that at some point in time, that when my calendar kind of frees up, I'll let them know. And if they reach back and they're willing to do an interview. If not, you have kind of a recipe here. When we actually start talking about doing newspapers and doing, you know, journalism and that type of stuff, we will get into that. But at this point in time, let's just kind of move forward. And it's good that we all get onto the same sheet. So let's take a look at what they are doing by actually getting their subscription. Now, they do not have, by the way, they do not have an online subscription, which would be nice, but they don't have one. Anyway, as you know, Constitution education is very critical, and going to constitutioneducation.us is an awesome place to go. It's Keith Borders' website. Please use that education. If you've got an organization, you've got people that need that, by all means, use that. And in so doing, we would ask that, you know, you credit, at least credit Keith Broders and the Constitution Education, Constitution Club, whatever, you know, he's calling that organization today. But more importantly, if you have the opportunity, give him a contribution, because I know this guy is living on a very tight fixed income, very tight fixed budget, and could use help if you are so inclined, if you're capable of helping others. He's definitely somebody that's worthy of. It's not like this guy is living a riotous life. This guy works 7 days a week on trying to, you know, move forward and trying to maintain some momentum in constitutional education, constitutional efforts, and so forth. I've never heard this guy, you know, he may have in a different life, but he's not one that's out there partying and that type of stuff. So just to be clear, this guy is a hard-working man that is focused on what is important at hand, and that is the Constitution. Anyway, we also recommend that if you're looking for dust covers, if you're looking to protect expensive equipment, go to radiodustcovers.com. You can get any type of custom dust cover you need. Stan Kluwitz, happy to help, and he's actually happy to help give you something that's uniquely different if you so require it. Because, you know, one of the things that we needed, we had a piano finish, and the basic felt that he used as a fabric underneath could potentially scratch, you know, really fine scratch this piano finish that we covered. And so we asked him to get some fleece, or, you know, very soft fleece, so that it would basically not cause scratching and so forth. We're very happy with the results. Cost a little more, but bottom line, if you want to get what you want and you want to have the protection that you need, give him a call. And or you can give his numbers there, or you can send him an email. He's actually very responsive via email as well. And so our comment line, 425-270-5416. And we are, you know, moving forward with these petitions. I don't have them done yet, folks, and I apologize. It's just that, you know, you have some family come and visit you. It kind of throws you out of your game as far as getting some things done, because the house has to be presentable. Yeah, I'm making fun, but I think it's kind of funny how, you know, you have this room that's, it's kind of like your cleaning room, the mud room or what have you, and that's where you would keep, you know, your cleaning stuff. And it's like, You know, I'm not picking on women, because men do this in their unique ways too. But I find it funny that it's not acceptable to have vacuums and cleaning material in your cleaning room. And so when we have company over, we have to, you know, sterilize a lot of stuff, or at least make it so that it's presentable. And I'm going, you know, this doesn't seem to be real. It's like a facade. It's like, you know, It's like we're lying to people that we don't have vacuums. Anyway, I'm having too much fun. But needless to say, when you do have family come over, and even though your family knows your darker secrets, that you actually have a vacuum, you still go through, everything has its place. And that's true. I mean, I'm a huge advocate for making sure that things go in their place. And guys are probably this way with tools. And as a matter of fact, I'm sure all the ladies out there could probably talk about how guys are equally as OCD or obsessive about, you know, their own little things and so forth. Nevertheless, I'm not complaining. I always get a giggle when I notice these types of things. And I go, oh, you know what? Whatever makes the missus happy, whatever makes us happy, whatever helps us succeed. because in marriage, that's the important part, right? Is success in succeeding. And my friends, what I would also tell you is taking action in getting things done and doing things and getting them done right is critical to our success as well. Well, so what that means is that we basically are reliant upon your success. This is why we are here to help you. If you have questions, you need help, you need us to expound on things, that's what we're here for. Now, as I publish, by the way, I'm going to be moving forward and publishing. We're getting into what we again call this comprehensive, or what I would say, comprehensive constitutional positions to campaign on for county, state, and federal elections. So we're at a point where we're now kind of defining terms. And one of the things that we defined was bills of attainder, ex post facto laws, citizenship. And it's under citizenship where I'm going to get back to this. And we're going to include the oath and add a couple of petitions that would be all a part of this, as well as we covered the equal footing clause. And so at this point in time, what we haven't covered is we have not covered the petitions for the equal footing clause. And so we have two that we're kind of laying out here. Again, these aren't perfect, but these are petitions that, you know, can either spawn more petitions or we can make an all-inclusive petition. I would rather err on highlighting and identifying a very specific problem. In the equal footing clause, there are quite a few little problems that come from the fact that the federal government has actually disabled or taken away resources and abilities and sovereignty from some states and done differently to other states. And so I think it's important to be able to identify all of those types of things so that each state can stand up and say, hey, you know, you gave these people this when you took this from us, and we have this and you took this from them. We'll be right back after these two comments.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we're going to dive straight into these petitions, like I told you. And so when we're going through these are not the full petition, by the way. This is really just a topic that we want to square up on and hit directly so that we can get good air under that ball and get a home run out of each of these. So the real petition, this is basically challenging the authority of the federal government and how they basically assumed this ability to constrain or restrain state sovereignty. So this is Now, again, we're kind of working on these things, but this is basically how it would lay out. Where, you know, the petition would basically call for, you know, the federal government to identify, or actually not even the federal government, your county commissioners, your state legislators, you need to go to them and say, where is the authority in the Constitution for Congress to reduce or restrain a state's sovereignty? One, the Uniformity Clause requires all states must be treated equally by the federal government without disparity. Article 4, Section 3 restricts the federal government from being able to take any action that would prejudice the claim of any state or of the states together, united, especially when it came to the forming of states. And Section 3 is all about the forming of states. The next one that I think is equally important is all initial states were declared in their enabling acts in every way. They were equal in every way. To deviate from this course would require an amendment. Therefore, each state legislature needs to declare itself as a full sovereign state over all things that have not been formally delegated to the general government. And that state needs to also acknowledge that all states in the union are equal in that same capacity. Therefore, we're all equal-footed siblings as parties to the compact. I'm absolutely shocked that there are so many states that allowed the federal government, and I think these people just didn't understand. They didn't know what was going on. They had no idea what the federal government was up to when they gave them their own constitution and said, this is what you need to have in your constitution. You know, we don't care where you put it, but it's got to be in there for us to approve you to be a state. They couldn't do that. They're required. So just let me kind of get into this here. We will get into this. The ability of the general government to possess land. This is the next, by the way, this is the second petition. The ability of the general government to possess land and or resources for direct wealth and control was viewed as unacceptable. This is why the ability for the federal government to regulate territories was included under the responsibility of Congress to admit new states into this union. This is why this power was not listed as an enumerated power in Article 1, Section 8, so that the federal government could then go out and start conquering land and basically create United States land without any states being, you know, for or, you know, perceived or, you know, future plans in that territory. In other words, it becomes federal property and it maintains itself as federal property. Again, that was unacceptable. When the framers went through, and I'm taking a side here, when the framers went through the ratification debates, they talked specifically about the evils that the British Crown would basically go and seize forests and large parcels of land and restrict the people from being able to eat the wild beasts and forage through the forests to feed themselves, knowing that these were great resources in so many different ways for the people. And instead, the king or the monarch at the time and or the government at the time felt that they were going to oppress their people, let them starve so that they would be able to get more from them. In other words, this was absolute despotism. And they recognize despotism and that it becomes a very easy path for any type of centralized government, a government with central general powers, to be able to do these things. So when they actually included these things in the Constitution regarding standing armies, regarding the ability for the federal government to possess land, they were very clear that the federal government was enumerated and these were the only parcels of land that they could possess. Okay, so moving on, as I said, this type of control was viewed as unacceptable. This is why the ability for the federal government to regulate territories, again, was included under the responsibility of Congress to admit new states into the union. This is not a power. It is a responsibility in admitting states. Ensuring that the union would grow with new parties coming into the union instead of this federally controlled land. all federal property must be challenged to determine if each piece of federal property is either a military installation, in other words, a fort, magazine, or arsenal, which those are the enumerated objects in the Constitution, and this serves the Union's strategic needs. So what I just said, in including these enumerated powers, military installations, to have a military installation for an army unit in the middle of Utah, for what? I mean, training, deployment, mountain training? There's got to be some rhyme or reason as to why it's there. Because 9 tenths out of 10, most military bases are there. I mean, when you look at the coastline, you'll actually see naval forts and naval positions and, you know, hardened guns. And, you know, like, I'm trying to remember that. Fort Myers, is it Fort Myers that's up there in Baltimore where you've got those big cannons pointing out to Oceanside? I mean, that was the standard type of forts that they were using. And I can understand the silos throughout the Midwest where we have, you know, the ability to launch from the heartland of America. But, you know, there's got to be a good strategic reason why these military bases exist. And as a matter of fact, I have a problem with the fact that all of these proving grounds, all, you know, this bombing ranges and these types of things, why they are, you know, separated by service. Why does the Air Force have all of these different bombing ranges and the Navy has theirs and the Marine Corps shares the Navy and then the Army has theirs as well? Now, we have to actually start learning how to actually getting these armed forces kind of under control, but I've not talked about this very much, very often, but when it comes down to the power in the Constitution, the only power for a standing military force in the Constitution is the United States Navy, which grants the Marine Corps under that because that's the part that they're the same department. Now, the Army and the Air Force and Space Force and all these other things, sorry, there's nothing in the Constitution that even requires the necessity of that. There is no reason why the Navy can't take over and actually start operating all these bases abroad. And as a matter of fact, right, wrong, or indifferent, for whatever the strategic interests are, we need to start reevaluating these things, folks. Because I believe that the states need to step up and step in and say, hold on here. You know, you've been bypassing this whole constitutional two-year budget and these constraints in trying to keep you from having a standing army. And so you've created not only a standing military army, but you've also created standing armies as enforcement armies, and you don't have the authority to do this. So we've got to start challenging all this stuff. But back to this petition. Because I've kind of wandered again, as I talked about the magazines, you know, Fort, Magazine, and Arsenal, and that how these things serve the Union's strategic needs for security purposes, or ports of entry. So we need to evaluate ports of entry for the receipt of commerce or people. In other words, docks, yards, what I call international terminals in an airport, those types of things where people are coming in from foreign nations or goods are coming in from foreign nations, the federal government does have a responsibility to actually make sure that what's coming in is being allowed to come in. And those people who are coming in, whether they've applied for immigration status, if not, they should be turned away. The only people that should be able to come in, unless they've got a visa to visit, that's it. You know, people, you don't have a right to just come here. And we're going to be getting to an invasion in just a second here. But the fact of the matter is this, folks, that these powers that are enumerated, there was reasons why the federal, they knew the federal government needed to do these things. And that's it. And they also knew that a jealous central-powered government wanted to consume more power to grant itself unlimited powers so that it could get into a position where it controlled every facet of government and the people. And so
back to this petition, there's also this needful buildings thing. So we need to evaluate the needful buildings to make sure that each one is directly associated to an enumerated role, responsibility, or power. If it's for the Environmental Protection Services, sorry, that's not an enumerated role, responsibility, or power or property in the Constitution, nor any of its ratified amendments. Therefore, it is unconstitutional. And to demand or to vote for creating more buildings and doing these things is rebellion against the Constitution. There's only one process, folks, of granting the federal government the ability to do this stuff. Only one process. That is the Article 5 process. And if there is no amendment to the Constitution delegating that authority, then it is unconstitutional, it's a usurpation, and it is a vehicle of tyranny, and it becomes despotic in the hands of our government. So we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so what we did was we came up again, I'm just kind of giving you a summary of the two petitions that we've basically drawn up and why they're two separate petitions. One is basically challenging the state to get the state to clearly identify where the federal government has the ability to contort, to basically pervert the sovereignty of an individual state, that all states must be treated equal, just on that one premise right there. Then the next one is basically similar to the land jurisdiction we're doing. So this technically right here, the other petition is basically challenging the jurisdiction that the federal government has to claim any land within a state for itself. So one is the sovereignty and the equal footing concept, and the other one, which is equally associated, because if the federal government basically claims that the states are not, you know, superior to the federal government, that they can come in along and create a treaty, they can surrender land, they can sell your land. So that's one of the things that actually will link to the state land and resources petitions as well. There's kind of this cross-pollinating, you know, there's this equal connecting of, because
they're building upon these same mutual premises, but they're coming in different constitutional perspectives or contexts. So moving forward, the next thing we're going to define and we're going to get into is an invasion. Now, Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution is pretty clear when it says that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them from or against an invasion. You understand? That shall protect each of them, each state, from an invasion. Now, does that mean that they have to be a border state that they have guaranteed that protection? No. Even interior states, if all of a sudden, you know, the invasion goes beyond the border state, the federal government is still responsible for protecting every state in the union from invaders. Just because they got into the heartland doesn't mean that they're legitimate anymore. Each state is to be protected from invaders. So let's move on. America has been, really, we've been under an invasion for well over a century. And in some ways, it's not just a matter of a people invading, it's ideologies and so forth. The concept of an invasion was defined by the framers within the constitutions and the terms and definitions provided by the framers during the ratification debates. By definition, though, by basic language definition, an invasion is an instance of invading a country or a region, or also an incursion by a large number of people, or an unwelcome intrusion into another's domain. That could be an individual invading your domain, and you can consider that act an invasion. Doesn't need to be multiple people, folks. But in this particular case, one of the definitions is multiple people or an incursion by a large number of people. The framers were so sensitive to this concept, to subversive activities and this paradigm of being able to be overrun by one's enemies. After the Revolutionary War, Continental Congress expelled the British loyalists. I go through this all the time. All of these things are mutually tied. I mean, it's not like symbiosis, but there are mutual purposes behind why they were doing these things. They were trying to create a sterile environment to protect and allow this nation to basically develop. So these British loyalists were actually kicked out of America in a plethora of means, whether that be on ship, by foot, or what have you. They lost all of their property other than what they could actually sneak into their pockets and carry out of the United States. The monetary restitution for the loss, and I've covered this quite a bit, but it needs to be stated. The monetary restitution for the loss of property confiscation by the independent states was one of the contested issues in the treaty talks with Britain for years, and was the driving factor as to why the British never honored the treaty and was constantly harassing and impressing American ships and sailors. To be clear, the invasion, as the Constitution was being formed, included subversive elements. I'm telling you, ever since we kicked Britain's butt, they have been working and working and working to basically take us back and to control us. And they believe they have us under their control, under their thumb. But they don't realize that this Constitution is still one big can of whoop butt, and we're going to open it up and we're going to whoop butt on them and the rest of the globalists. Because even though they convinced players in government, people that are serving in government, to go outside their constitutional boundaries and assume powers, roles, responsibilities that they had no legal ability to do. Well, folks, that's all fraud. In other words, everything they've done was fraudulent. It's not like Britain came in and has gotten us to amend the constitutions and allow them to sell the land back to Britain and to allow us to be, you know, invaded. No. Everything that they're doing is absolutely violations of the Constitution.
And this is why I keep pointing this out and why I keep, you know, going at odds with all of these folks that are, you know, trying to propel these, you know, sovereign citizen movements and all of these different myopic movements. Folks, it is all a huge facade. You've got to get your arms around this one fact that they don't have any constitutional standing in doing what they're doing. And we have all the power and authority to hold them accountable, especially because we've got these beautiful things like the oath of office, Section 3 to get rid of these folks, and so forth and so on. Anyway, to be clear, again, an invasion as the Constitution was being formed included subversive elements walking across boundaries from the Spaniards in the South. In other words, we had a border to the south of us between Georgia and Florida, and that boundary or that border basically could have easily been invaded by the Spaniards or to the west or to the north of us. These subversive elements or potential subversive elements were not simply viewed as military combatants, but were also viewed as ideologically or politically aligned with anti-constitutional government laws. Thus, the removal of the Tory Acts, or I should say the removal of the Tories via the Tory Acts, and the requirement for the oaths of citizens, military service, you know, they take an oath too, and public servants taking an oath. Now, one of the things that I have to actually mention here, because we talk about, you know, these combatants ideologically charged and so forth, and thus the removal of the Tory Acts and all of that. But one of the things that we have to point out is New Amsterdam. And why is this important? Why is New Amsterdam important? Because New Amsterdam happened to be a colony that we now call New York. How did we acquire New York as a British colony? How did we take that colony? We happened to use that same doctrine of infiltration and invading and basically converting it over by the will of the people. This is what the Mohammedans are doing in Europe. This is what they're trying to do to the United States. They're trying to basically use migration of people as if we don't have laws and if this is not a country. I mean, if this was just the wild pastures of an unorganized country, then yeah, a migration could occur. But we don't allow migrations when you actually have a legal border. And the fact that even our own jurists in America who have taken an oath of office and they put their arm to the square and they say, I will support the Constitution, even though they don't say that. You need to read what the federal jurists say. They do not, they're supposed to, by law, support the Constitution. They're supposed to take an oath that says that, but they don't. And so my point is this. This is how they actually get away with these types of things, because they redefine stuff and they're literally, they are committing an insurrection against the United States and our Constitution. And when I say the United States, I specifically mean the Constitution, because it's the progressives today that look at the patriots and those of us like myself that are calling them out for violating the Constitution. Well, the federal government is not violating the, you know, the government laws. They're making up their own laws as they go along, and they're following every law that they've made up. Well, of course they are. Of course they are. And they're working and they are in league with the globalists who are working to destroy our constitutional republic. All of these people need to be kicked aside. And as a matter of fact, all of these assets and resources, you do realize, based on the Tory Acts and based on history and based on what has to happen, people like Bezos and Microsoft and all of these companies that are American companies that are operating here in America or that have been operating abroad that we pull back, you know, these folks that are at the helms, these captains, these owners of these states, or I should say these corporations, you know, they could be stripped, these resources could be stripped from them, granted to the states, and basically bequeathed upon other people to basically say, you're going to take this over. Because we as government don't have the power and authority to operate Microsoft or an operating system company, right? And so who's going to do it? Well, maybe they'll have it open for an auction.
But we clearly need to send the message to say, you know what, if you're going to be, you know, a captain of industry, if you're going to lead these corporations, you have to do it so that you don't support a rebellion, because if so, you're going to be gone. The resources will stay. These are American companies. We'll be right back after these two messages.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
So obviously, when you start covering some really juicy stuff and you kind of want to keep going, you bleed into the promos. Now, just remember that these promos are mine. I will not be able to bleed in. When all of a sudden I'm gone, I'm going to be gone. Because when we actually monetize this and the radio stations are actually bringing in their revenue ads to insert in here, these will no longer be my ads. There will no longer be, you know, what I would control over what is being covered in those spots. So they will be actually stepping on whatever I'm saying during their time. So anyway, to be clear, as I was stating, anything and any person that is actually failing to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, and actually colluding, like what we see with Microsoft and Apple and Google and all of these companies, every single one of these companies would actually be seized by the government because they're actually conducting insurrections against our Constitution. That every U.S. citizen needs to have this oath. So this is one of the reasons why. Remember I told you about the oath, right? And I talked about this little concept that we had to have, you know, more clarity on the oath. And so down the road, we actually need to actually have corporate oaths as well, because corporate oaths are critical. That everybody that starts a business, they have to understand that they have a responsibility to ensure that they are supporting and defending the Constitution. Folks, this is how corporations have been actually doing and undermining so that they can seize more control. Do you think America would be in the situation we are today had all the corporations that were founded here were not able to actually go and create these alliances and create this globalist movement with the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Gettys, and all of these other, you know, powers, insatiably thirsty, powerful, you know, people around the world to create this collective globalist plan? Seriously, if they were to be held in check, just like a U.S. citizen, that they could, not their resources, but they themselves, as the helmsman, the captains, and those other people who are engaged in this conspiracy to, sell secrets, to work in undermining the liberties of the American people and working against our Constitution. I mean, could you fathom this? And the irony here is, folks, that most of these corporations kind of use the Constitution to establish themselves. And, oh, these things were great. This was great American ingenuity. No, this was all done with machinations and designs to actually establish themselves. I mean, look at what Amazon did. They were constantly giving away your information to the CIA. I don't know if they did it on a daily basis or however they dumped that data, but they had no business taking and tracking. Because, again, this goes back to the essence of our rights in our person. They don't have a right to demand and take and collect that kind of information, especially without us knowing, and especially without giving us an opportunity to opt out to say, no, you have no business doing this, especially with the potential relationships that corporations and government already have. We have to view corporations as these maniacal things in some particular cases. I mean, they have to go out of their way to prove that they have nobility of intent and design. And if they can't, then we have to look at them as a nefarious institution. I mean, I can't see why a great corporation can't arise and come and actually be successful on the principles of liberty. But for some reason, they all want to work together so they can take the whole pie and share it amongst themselves. Instead of saying, no, I want to compete on that pie. I want to be able to, and that's exactly how Bill Gates and how Bezos, all of these people created backroom deals to give them advantages so that they could take a bigger slice out of that pie. That's how they've done this stuff. With the cooperation and collusion of government. But anyway, I digress, right? So what we want to do now is we want to continue kind of going through, because we're covering the insurrection, we're covering the invasion. We've kind of covered that. And so what we want to do in going through the insurrection is kind of going through this requirement that we have. You know what? The invasion, I did not go through the petition, though. And there's a little bit more to go through. So let me basically tell you, we're going to get this petition on the invasion because we actually have a petition on this. And some of the clarity that we're adding that you're going to hear today is, I think, some very important meat. Because what we want to do is we want to call out everybody who has failed to actually stand up against this invasion that we have on our southern border. That as we've defined it, anybody that's coming across, even combatants that come across that line, just as we did in the colony days to take over New Amsterdam, they did not want anybody to just come in here unattested. You can't come in here. You have to immigrate if you are a foreigner. And you have to report yourself, and you have to identify why you're here, and the basic things that they were doing for immigration purposes. And that has to still apply today. So anyway, the petition is basically this. It is an immediate removal, and this goes to the county commissioners, and it works its way up all the way to the federal or to the state government, calling upon all federal government to be identified to whether they be removed or not. And this is why we do this. And we'll go through this. An immediate removal of all representatives and senators of Congress who have not called for the deployment of the militia to the southern border from their current service to include over the past 40 years of service. In addition, any and all jurists who have tried cases over the course of their career regarding immigration that did not point out the requirement of deploying the militia and this violation of the Constitution by not protecting the states from an invasion. Furthermore, any and all who have served in the executive department who have failed to call upon Congress to call up the militia to deal with, because only Congress has this power, to deal with the continuous invasion that we've been suffering through for over a century. So we're going with 40 years because for the most part, you know, anybody that's alive over 40 years that, you know, has been in Congress, not too many people. And most of them, you know, we'll cover them over all of this. But bottom line, anybody who's still alive walking and they're retired from Congress, I'm just including anybody and everybody, even executives or jurists, all people who have actually dealt with in some way as a jurist over a case, the executive in trying to execute the laws of the union, or the jurists of, or I should say Congress and the legislatures in having the responsibility to fulfill their roles and responsibilities of protecting us from an invasion. Every single one of these folks needs to be called out and removed immediately. And when I say removed, if they're not in office, that doesn't mean anything. That they are to be removed and actually to be basically banned for life from public service. And all of their emoluments, the removal of their emoluments, pay, and any form of benefits that they are receiving at the expense of the taxpayers. To any member of the Congress, the judiciary, or executive who have retired from service and failed to call clearly, call for the deployment of the militia to repel an invasion in any form, along with our borders and our ports of entry. In other words, if they have not uttered those words that we must deploy the militia to stop this invasion, this is an invasion. First off, if they didn't do that, they've always tried to redefine it as an immigration problem or crisis or what have you, then they're guilty. There's only one thing they can do. When people come across that border, that is an invasion. That's how it's always been deemed. These are an unwanted intrusion into our domain, period. These are the definitions. That's why we go through this stuff with you. And so... what we're basically stating is that all of these folks, every single one of them, for not protecting us from this invasion and not doing what is necessary, they have to go. Because that was the law of the land. They couldn't just kick the ball down the court, nor could they say, oh, well, we're going to change this without changing the Constitution. And I'm going to tell you, folks, had Congress come along and said, hey, you know what, this little line in here that will protect each of you guys from an invasion, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to remove that line. I'll bet you anything that the states have said, are you kidding me? No way. You are going to protect us. And by the way, you just pointed out something that we didn't realize that you haven't done. And so now we now demand that you absolutely protect us from an invasion, period. Do you understand that, Congress? And in so doing, what we have just done is we've laid down the gauntlet and basically told Congress that they have no defense, that their oath of office has required them to actually do the one thing that the Constitution dictated, that whenever there was to be an invasion or when they were suffering from an invasion, when there appeared to be an invasion, they had to call forth the militia. Folks, I mean, it's, I don't know how much more simpler we can make this, if you understand what I'm saying. So the Constitution was written with such simplicity that you can't misinterpret this stuff. You can't misinterpret this stuff. Anyway, as we're looking at it, we pretty much ran out of time, and it sounds like I've got the helicopters landing overhead. Folks, we're going to have more. All of these things we're doing now are going through issues with definitions and so forth. And so we will be back with more. We'll be wrapping up in the next week or two. I'm Jerry Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point
where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.